Saddam Hussein has the motive and the means and the recklessness and the hatred to threaten the American people. Saddam Hussein will be stopped.
If the United States claims a right to attack a country before it becomes an enemy, then other countries are going to claim that right, and North Korea is doing that.
A war in Iraq would serve as a recruiting ground for Al-Qaeda. A war in Iraq at this point, I think, is frankly insane.
If Saddam Hussein were to say today, I'm ready to open up my country to free market capitalism, they would all of a sudden be our friend.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Friday, February 7th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. The Bush administration has raised the national terror alert from yellow to orange, the second highest level in the color-coded system. Attorney General John Ashcroft cited an increased likelihood that the Al-Qaeda terror network would attack Americans either at home or abroad. Ashcroft said apartment buildings, hotels, or other lightly secured targets in the United States could be vulnerable. The attorney general also said terrorists might seek economic targets, including the transportation and energy sectors, as well as symbolic targets and symbols of American power. That alert comes on the heels of President Bush's bellicose warning yesterday to Iraqi President Saddam Hussein that, quote, the games are over, made during a late afternoon statement at the White House.
The regime is pursuing an elaborate campaign to conceal its weapons, materials, and to hide or intimidate key experts and scientists, all in direct defiance of Security Council 1441. The Iraqi regime has acquired and tested the means to deliver weapons of mass destruction. All the world has now seen the footage of an Iraqi Mirage aircraft with a fuel tank modified to spray biological agents over wide areas. One of the greatest dangers we face is that weapons of mass destruction might be passed to terrorists who would not hesitate to use those weapons. Saddam Hussein has longstanding, direct, and continuing ties to terrorist networks. Senior members of Iraqi intelligence and Al-Qaeda have met at least 8 times since the early 1990s. The same network has plotted terrorism against France, Spain, Italy, Germany, the Republic of Georgia, and Russia, and the United States, along with a growing coalition of nations, is resolved to take whatever action is necessary to defend ourselves and disarm the Iraqi regime. No doubt he will play a last-minute game of deception. The game is over. Saddam Hussein has the motive and the means and the recklessness and the hatred to threaten the American people. Saddam Hussein will be stopped.
Congressman Ron Paul, a Republican of Texas, co-sponsored a bill this week with Democratic Representative Peter DeFazio of Oregon to repeal the law granting Bush broad military authority to attack Iraq. Paul answered callers' questions on C-SPAN yesterday about his reasons for opposing the war in Iraq.
I think you're absolutely right. It seems to me that right now we're looking for the justification. The decision was made many months ago to go to war. Now we're trying to find the reason to go to war. And even though the justification was greater during the Persian Gulf War I, they really had to use a lot of propaganda to get the American people riled up to go to war. And as I recall, you know, they talked about 500,000 troops on the border of Saudi Arabia ready to invade. That turned out not to be true. And the stories about babies being torn from incubators, that turned out to be not true. So even with more justification, there needed to be a lot of propaganda. So that's what we're going through now, trying to get the people to agree with a war that has already been decided upon. Yeah, and I think if we follow your advice, as soon as we're done with Iraq, we go to Korea. And then where else? So that's what it leads to. And you're correct about the Al-Qaeda and the threat of nuclear and biological and chemical attacks on this country. But those of us who oppose this war oppose it for that reason, because we think you're going to increase the chances of it. And the al-Qaeda should be looked at. But have you noticed that Osama bin Laden is not talked about anymore? But you have to remember, if you're concerned about that, you have to realize that Saddam Hussein was not responsible for that. You should be looking for the al-Qaeda. You should be looking for Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden, most likely right now, is in Pakistan, and they're our ally, and we give them a lot of money. Pakistan is a dictatorship, a military dictatorship that was threw out an elected government, and yet they're our best pals right now. And yet we're dealing with Iraq at the time when we should be dealing with the al-Qaeda.
Republican Congressman Ron Paul. During a conversation with Peace Watch this afternoon, Representative Peter DeFazio said he heard nothing in Secretary of State Colin Powell's address to the UN on Wednesday that convinced him the U.S. needs to go to war against Iraq. DeFazio was one of several Democrats who voted against granting Bush war powers in October. We asked him if he's heard from his constituents on this critical issue.
Thus far, we've heard a lot more from folks who have concerns or who are opposed. We have been starting to get more from people who feel that we should go ahead and attack. This morning, as I was walking into my office, the three gentlemen sitting in the lobby with his little coffee shop were very avid for the war and very upset with me for opposing the war. So, I think the constant drumbeats. Secretary Powell is the best messenger. They could have more people trust him, I think, than almost anyone else in the administration. I mean, I like Colin Powell. I don't want to feel bad about him, but I think they're beginning to move some people, but a lot of folks still have real reservations.
You feel as though you're representing the majority of your constituents by your position?
I probably am. I hope I am. I would hope to think that I have a majority support for my position on this issue. I mean, they elected me to learn more about these issues and make some tough decisions. I've learned a lot about this. I've spent a lot of time studying it, meeting with experts in classified and unclassified briefings, asking questions, and I really believe that this is a mistake. This is the first ever preemptive war in the history of the United States. Let's be honest about that. Congress should then vote a declaration of war as is required by the Constitution if Congress feels that's warranted, and the President should request it and make the case if he feels that's warranted. We shouldn't go under this vague use of force, blank check, probably unconstitutional delegation of war making that we passed last fall.
So how much support do you have, Congressman, for this resolution in the Congress that just voted to grant the President these powers, the use of force authorization?
Thus far, there's around 30 members. I'm trying to give people something to organize around. I don't hold out, the hope that suddenly the Republican leadership is going to have a change of heart and jump on this, move it, and require us to vote. But remember, the President said he didn't need to go to Congress last summer, and he ultimately had to because of public opinion. He said he didn't need to go to the UN, and he wouldn't go to the UN. He ultimately did because of public opinion. These people will be driven by public opinion, and if enough people organize around my resolution or otherwise raise concerns about this war, we may yet get to have another debate. It's kind of interesting. As I woke up this morning and listened to the radio and looked at the newspaper, and I saw that Kim Jong-il has threatened to use the Bush Doctrine for a preemptive war against the United States. This is something that a number of us said when the President published that last summer. This is a big mistake to enthrone in international law by the U.S. condoning it, the idea of preemptive wars, wars against someone who might pose a future potential threat against you, as opposed to someone who has attacked you or who is clearly and irrefutably on the verge of attacking you. It's a huge departure from 500 years of international law and precedent, and it's already starting to come home and roost. And if the President further sanctions it by launching a preemptive war against Iraq, I think we're opening Pandora's box. Pakistan, India, China, Taiwan, apparently now North Korea against South Korea or us or Japan. This is a big problem, and this administration, I think, is being quite reckless at this point.
What would the ramifications of that be if North Korea were to actually follow through on making an attack? Is that a serious threat on their part? We know that they have nuclear capability, but what is their range? I would imagine they could attack bases in South Korea.
Well, they could certainly attack the U.S. 36,000 U.S. troops who are right on their border. They have conventional artillery that can devastate Seoul in a matter of minutes because Seoul is within range of that. They have successfully tested intermediate range missiles, which could hit Japan, certainly. And they're trying to and have tested long range missiles that could hit the United States, but the missile failed to work properly. So, this seems to me somehow this is a real threat that the president should be dealing with, and they're saying they're going to do it diplomatically. Well, good. If we can take care of this problem diplomatically, and I hope we can, then we certainly ought to be able to take care of the problems in Iraq and the Middle East diplomatically.
Do you see which one of these situations do you see as the bigger threat at this time?
All credible sources that I know of say that the biggest continuing threat of immediate attack against Americans is the Al-Qaeda network. I would certainly put at this point, I think, in terms of potential aggression and known weapons, I would put Kim Jong-il right up there, right after them, possibly. I mean, he's psychopathic. We know that. I mean, he's starved 2 million of his own people to death, murdered thousands. Not a good guy, and he's got nuclear weapons.
And not Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein is in a box right now. I mean, he's, whatever he has is hidden or he's running it around the country. He has shown no inclination to trade it to Al-Qaeda operatives or others, according to all the sources I've seen. And, I think he's pretty well contained. And, we should just try and get more inspectors on the ground, some overflights, and just like we did in the last decade, find these materials which he agreed to give up and destroy them. They destroyed thousands of tons of this stuff. And it took 4.5 years to find it last time, and we're saying now, well, it's been there a month. Well, yeah, okay. Well, let's give it a little bit longer, and I think we'll find the stuff. And I think if we did continue to contain him and we did find and destroy those materials, that sooner or later his own people are going to take care of the Saddam Hussein problem. I mean, he is a horrible, brutal, murdering despot who rules by terror. And sooner or later, one of his generals, who he often has to purge and assassinate, is going to be successful in getting rid of him.
U.S. Representative Peter DeFazio of Oregon. 2 dozen left-wing members of the European Parliament are on their way back home today after a week-long trip to Iraq. As part of their trip, the parliamentarians met with United Nations officials in Baghdad. From Amman, Jordan, Aaron Glantz reports on their findings.
It's close to midnight in the lobby of the Marriott Hotel in the Jordanian capital, Amman. A dozen members of the European Parliament drink beer and sip red wine as they unwind from their week-long trip to Iraq. While the world watched Colin Powell preach war on Iraq to the UN Security Council in New York, these parliamentarians were touring Iraq's schools and hospitals. Paddy McKenna is a Green Party parliamentarian from Ireland.
I have a number of cases of children, one mother with a child who was a year and a half old, who looked like a child of about 6 weeks. It was actually quite, two months. It was quite traumatic to see this child that was actually a year and a half old, to think that was just, that it was so malnourished. We also saw another child which was 8 months old, and basically it was just like, it was an extremely distressing case where the child was so malnourished, it was just like a skeleton. We met another woman, this was in the hospitals, because we visited the hospitals, another woman who had, this was her second child, her first child died as a result of being underweight because of the fact of the sanctions, and her second child was in the hospital as a result of gastroenteritis, was in a serious condition because, of course, of contaminated water.
In the south of Iraq, the cancer rate shot up by a factor of 11 after U.S. forces used depleted uranium against Iraq in 1991. But even there, Paddy McKenna says one can see the ravages of the sanctions regime.
We also saw a lot of illustrations of birth defects, particularly in the southern area in Basra, because of depleted uranium, but I also think that some of those birth defects would be a result of the sanctions, because 50% of pregnant women are malnourished. 50%. They don't have enough folic acid. So clearly a lot of the spina bifida cases are down to basically lack of folic acid and lack of resources for foods. These are things that should be avoidable in a country that's the second richest oil reserves in the world. So it's completely unjustified what's going on. And if there are weapons of mass destruction, there is still no evidence. We met with the UN officials. They said that they still, you know, had no evidence as such.
Miquel Mayol is a Marxist Basque separatist who represents Catalonian Spain in the European Parliament.
A teacher who, before the Gulf War and before sanctions, earned enough for coming to Europe for holidays. Now they earn $6 a month. They need the food supply of the program All for Food. They need that. They need 1 kilo and 800 grams of food that they can get for 250 dinars. That is 10 cents. But some don't have the 10 cents. To pay, and they need the help of NGOs to get this food.
Khaled Badr Khan is a Kurdish nationalist living in London. He accompanied the European delegation to a Kurdish refugee camp near Mosul, the northernmost Iraqi city still under the control of the central government in Baghdad. He says the 10,000 people there are suffering under the dual tyranny of Saddam Hussein and the sanctions regime.
Nobody gives them any attention. They've been there for the last 10 years, nobody give them any attention. The UN give them the minimum. The UN never raised the question of their safety. The question that the way they're being treated from the UN and the Iraqi government and all the international community. This is the forgotten people. 10,000 people lost their villages in the Turkish borders, which Turkey took advantage at that time, at early 90s, destroyed their villages and kicked them out. And as you know, if Turkey can kick another couple of millions, they will do that.
The Turkish army has already moved thousands of troops into Kurdish-controlled northern Iraq. And Khaled Badr Khan says the Kurdish refugees will suffer even more if there is a war on Iraq.
See, my concern goes to them because they are just below the 36th parallel. And any military operation will start there. They're going to be the first people to suffer. They have 5 days reserve food only, and if this food finished, they're going to be all over looking for food. And under the bombing, they're going to move to Mosul. That's what they told me. I asked him, what's your contingency plan for something like that? He says, we're not going to stay here and die. We will go to Mosul and tell them we want to live. We want food. They cannot have food. They don't have food. The Iraqi government will not give them food because they don't have enough for themselves. So we're not blaming the Iraqi that they don't have enough, knowing the Iraqi government preparing themselves for a war.
Mass anti-war demonstrations are planned across Europe February 15th, the day after Chief Inspector Hans Blix and Mohamed El-Baradei present their next report to the UN Security Council. Organizers say the last mass demonstration in London drew more than 400,000 people. Some are predicting more than 1 million people will turn out this time. For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Aaron Glantz in Amman, Jordan.
The British newspaper The Guardian reported recently that the North Korean Foreign Ministry said, quote, North Korea is entitled to launch a preemptive strike against the U.S. rather than wait until the American military has finished with Iraq, unquote. Peace Watch spoke with journalist Tim Sharrock, who has written about U.S. relations with Korea for over 20 years, to get his assessment of the threat that North Korea poses.
It's the chickens coming home to roost for Bush's first strike policy. If the United States claims a right to attack a country before it becomes a problem, becomes an enemy, then other countries are going to claim that right, and North Korea is doing that. And they feel that the United States has been pointing nuclear weapons at them and threatening them with military attack for years, not only recently, but, you know, dating back to the Korean War. And so they're kind of answering Bush's challenge to the world and putting it in his face.
It doesn't seem as though the Bush administration is really taking this threat by North Korea too seriously. Can you tell us a little bit about North Korea's capability to actually launch such an attack?
They have enormous capability of attacking U.S. bases in South Korea, or even, you know, attacking South Korea itself. They've got hundreds of thousands of artillery shells very close to the border with South Korea. And one of the reasons that I think the U.S. has hesitated to even threaten military strikes in this situation is the very real possibility that any kind of bombing of North Korea could set off a peninsula-wide conflagration. That would be a terrible thing for the people of Korea and for anybody who lives there, including, you know, 37,000 American troops.
37,000.
Yeah. And so, you know, they do have they have an enormous military, about 1 million people under arms, and the Korean South Korean military is about 600,000. And so, you know, they have a capability of doing a lot of damage. But I think that this escalating rhetoric from North Korea is a sign that they may be very serious about developing nuclear weapons unless the United States can allay their fears that there's not going to be an attempt to overthrow their government or to, you know, take over their country.
I'm curious, when North Korea says it's entitled to launch a preemptive strike against the U.S. now, rather than waiting until the U.S. finishes its war with Iraq, so to speak, what would you say about the timing of all this? Why is Korea raising this issue now?
Well, they know it's a sort of maximum pressure time for the U.S. The U.S. is, you know, trying to get the world, the U.N. behind an invasion of Iraq and a major war in the Middle East, and they know that ratcheting up the pressure right now, you know, they're hoping, I guess, that the U.S. will finally see the light and turn towards negotiation. And I think in the last few days, we've seen in Congress, particularly in the U.S. Senate, calls by Democrats and Republicans for the Bush administration to finally grasp the gravity of the situation and talk directly with North Korea. They keep saying they will have talks sort of down the road, and they keep trying to paint this into this is a multilateral issue. But it's an issue between North Korea and the United States, and that's the only way it can be resolved.
And given the fact that North Korea does have the capability to launch missiles to South Korea, where, as you say, there are 37,000 troops already stationed there and more heading there as we speak, what has the administration said daily or recently, specifically the words of Donald Rumsfeld, that would give us any comfort that they're not actually exacerbating this tension between the North Korea and the U.S.?
Well, I wouldn't call Rumsfeld's statements very much comfort. I mean, the other day he labeled North Korea a terrorist nation, and that's certainly rhetoric not designed to quiet the situation or reduce the sense of crisis. And in fact, that was received very angrily by North Korea. But there's been other statements by the U.S. U.S. officials saying, you know, they want to talk, but they also are saying that, you know, they have the capability to fight a two-front war.
Yes, that's the thing. It sounds as though they're saying, well, come on, we're ready for you.
That's what it sounds like to me. But it's kind of they keep saying, you know, they're ready militarily, and they keep talking about, you know, we're ready militarily, but, you know, why not take them up on their offer to sign a non-aggression treaty? I think that's a reasonable proposal. And for the North Koreans, they feel that their future as a nation is at stake. Their sovereignty as a country is at stake. And one thing that's important to see in this whole situation is that while this crisis has been building, South and North Korea have been moving towards, you know, moving on their goal of reconciliation. Mm-hmm. Just the other day, a road was opened, and the first tourist from South Korea to North Korea went on a bus caravan into North Korea. So that process hasn't stopped.
Yes, and what would this do to the possibilities of reunification or reconciliation between North and South Korea if the U.S. is ratcheting up the war talk between Washington and Pyongyang?
Well, that's really, you know, what's really dangerous and kind of different about this situation than past crises with North Korea is that for the first time you have, you know, a large number of South Koreans very critical of the U.S. posture toward North Korea, and in fact, directly opposing the U.S. posture. You've had, you know, people in the streets, protesting how the fact that American soldiers that commit crimes cannot be tried by Korean courts, but that also represents this kind of widespread feeling that South Korea is treated unfairly by the United States, and they don't like the military relationship. A lot of people would like U.S. troops after 50 years to finally leave, and they see this militaristic attitude by the U.S. and the Bush administration's refusal to engage with North Korea as an impediment to their own internal peace process, which like I said, has been moving along quite well.
In your estimation, Tim Sharrock, how serious is this situation, and how does it compare with the crisis in Iraq?
Well, I don't think it's as serious as the crisis with Iraq, because I think the Bush administration appears to be hell-bent on going to war with Iraq, no matter what the rest of the world thinks or most of its citizens here think. But in Korea, I think they know and understand the dangers of how destructive a war could be there. And it seems to me that while they do make these statements that sound very belligerent, in both sides actually, the danger of actual conflict is not that high. But I would say that if North Korea continues this path and actually, I mean, they've kind of like lit the triggers for building nuclear weapons. They're not actually doing it. A lot of people here are saying, analysts and people in the government and people that follow Korea are warning that if they actually start separating the plutonium from this nuclear plant and making weapons-grade plutonium that could be made into atomic bombs, then that would be a point where it would really make it a military crisis. But it hasn't come to there, and I think they're months away from doing any actual weapons building. And I think there's time to negotiate this. And I think, the North Koreans have made it very clear what they want. Like I said, day after day they talk about this non-aggression treaty. And a few days ago in the Senate, Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage was asked about this non-aggression treaty, and he said the Bush administration hasn't embraced that idea because they don't think it could get through the Senate. And Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware of the Foreign Relations Committee said, well, if President Bush really wanted to get a non-aggression treaty pushed through the Senate, it would happen. And I think that's the crux of the issue. If the Bush administration puts its efforts behind a peace initiative in Korea and tries to get it through the Senate, it would happen. He could bring along Republicans to do that.
Independent journalist Tim Sharrock has reported on North Korea for over 20 years.
The most horrible word that I've ever heard. Korea is stopping my war plans. Korea. It's the end of my war with Iraq in a single word. Korea, you're stopping my war, North Korea. Oh, how could this be, North Korea? We've got to downplay North Korea. Oh, my Iraqi war is gonna be no more, you'll see. Korea, we've got to stop saying Korea, or my invasion plans into Iraqi land won't be. Can't you wait till Iraq is defeated? North Korea, we've got to downplay North Korea. Korea! I've been a good president. Love for my mommy and my daddy and my brother Jeff. I've worked so hard to get revenge for Daddy and get those oil fields for the family.
Korea, produced by members of the radio satire group The Christmas Coup Comedy Players at Pacifica Stations KPFT in Houston and WBAI in New York. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.